coming to you live from Steve's studio in Port Joe Smith in the Arachnid Quarantine Zone. It's Nothing Ventured, Nothing Game. I'm your host, Jared, and today I'm joined by Steve.
Yo.
And Fabio sends his love. He was not allowed out today. Today we are going to be doing a new segment called Power Up, where it's a semi-character build, like how to build a character in a specific manner, but based on a single idea. This idea today was brought to us by Fabio. He made a character. He basically said, I want to use aid. How can I use the aid action and make it viable consistently and build a character that isn't a bard or one of those typical, like a cleric or a bard, where you have your typical, oh, this is your support class. Me and Steve both built level 10 characters. We went from 1 to level 10. Everything we put in these characters are from the core rule book. Ish. I don't think we went too far outside the core rule book.
Well, it might be either, there may be one or two feats that were from
Lost Omens
or Gods of Magic.
Yeah.
But there may be only one feat. Most of the stuff is actually in the core rule book.
Yes. So, if you go to page 470 in your core rule book.
Okay, class.
you'll see on page 470, aid. What is aid? Quick reference. It's a reaction. But how do you use it? How do you use the reaction, right? Everything has to have a trigger. Mm-hmm. Your trigger is an ally is about to use an action that requires a skill check or an attack roll. So you can use aid to assist your partners in your attack roll. Most of the time, aid will be done, I want to say in our game, it's 80% on skill checks, maybe 20% attacks. Most of the time.
Because most people are doing their own thing in combat.
Yeah. So, how do you use aid? Unlike taking a reaction, and this is why I like, so you have your three action system. When you ready an action, you have to soak up two actions.
Yeah.
For aid, it's a reaction, and it only actually eats up one action. You have to ready it, quote-unquote, ready it, by telling your DM, hey, I want to aid so-and-so on their skill check, the thief to
pick
the
lock,
by doing A, B, C, or D. The DM, or your GM, as they describe in your book, will explain what skill you need, and typically, they say in the book, typically the DC, or the difficulty check, is 20, but the GM might adjust the DC for a particularly hard or easy task. Most of the time, you're looking at a +4, -2 situation. I know for me, if you have the really handy-dandy GM screen, it gives you the difficulties plus and minuses, so it can go +2, +4 for hard, very hard, and then it gets to the extremes, and then it's like -2 and so forth. So what happens when you use aid? Well, you have your 3 degrees of success, because failure is just failure.
Normally, happens.
Nothing happens. So on the success, you grant your ally a +1 bonus to their triggering check. Mm-hmm. Critical success, you get a +2 to the triggering check. If you're a master with the check you attempted, is +3, and if you're legendary, it's +4.
Yeah, so the only difference of having a higher skill is the results of a critical
success. Yes, and failure is a critical, nothing. Critical failure, you cause them to take a -1 on their check. So with that out the way.
So the cool thing that you guys might want to consider, if you're trying to use the aid action in your game, there's a lot of times in our game, and I've been guilty of it too, like, man, I have this third action. I don't know what to do with it. I'll just throw that -10 attack in the wind and just hope for a 20. And there's other ways where, like, oh, instead of doing that, you can go, hey, I know that, you know, we've already played three rounds of combat.
Yeah.
I already know that Fabio is going to go after me, and I know he's been having trouble hitting this thing because he needs to roll an 18.
Yeah.
Because, man, this thing's got a crazy AC. Okay, well, instead of throwing that crazy attack out, I'm going to try to roll an intimidate to help him. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily have to roll an attack roll to help somebody attack. You can roll, like, because in general, if you're trying to attack someone, the multiple attack penalty might kick in. Mm-hmm. So you can go, man, well, I'm going to try to use my intimidate check to try to mess that guy up to give that plus one or plus two to the person's next attack. So you don't always have to use an attack. You can use other skills. You can use athletics to try to mm-hmm. trip somebody. You're not actually tripping them, but you're giving the person a benefit.
Yeah, you could like kick dirt into their eye.
Yeah,
which isn't an attack.
It's a rack attack. You're not trying to do damage. You're mm-hmm. not trying to permanently bind somebody, but you're getting that plus one or plus two benefit, which just might be enough for that person to get that hit or to push the person over to get a critical. Because I know sometimes we're like, oh man, I rolled that 15. I was 1 point off from that critical hit.
Yeah,
that the aid could make that much of a difference.
Me and Steve both took two different approaches on building this character. If you're listening to this in the far flung future of July, there will be new races out in the Advanced Player's Guide. This is not July.
Yeah.
This is... I went with the route of a fighter-ranger hybrid.
Oh, okay.
Ranger was only... I only tossed it in there for a few things mm-hmm. because there are a few levels where you don't get a lot.
Yeah.
So Ranger kind of filled that level, especially with the way I built my fighter. He's specifically focused on ranged attacks. Mm-hmm. And I went halfling. And what did you do, Steve?
I went rogue as a primary class and multi-class archetype into fighter. Mm-hmm. I think I only actually took one thing. I took maybe one or two things.
From the fighter?
From fighter. And I went human, just for the... There's a specific feat
yeah.
that makes human mm-hmm. probably one of the best aiding classes.
Oh,
yeah. Aiding races, ancestries.
There is.
But I only think halfling gets something really cool too.
Yeah,
but just because like these two particular races or ancestries have a benefit doesn't necessarily mean you have to go with them. There's multiple different ways of getting bonuses and just helping out your party,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily having to be the best optimal thing that you have to pick.
And that's the point of this: is you're not. My build is in no way optimized for a lot of things. They can handle themselves in combat. They have a good amount of dexterity and strength mixed in with wisdom. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, like, they're not blowing people. They're not the barbarian. They're not hitting that, like, plus 10 every turn. Like, oh, man, I'm good. I know I'm critting on this.
Yeah.
Again, goblins aren't going to be a problem for this dude.
Yeah.
But down the road, the reason why I built this character is specifically for aid
mm-hmm.
and how to make the use of all my skills or the skills I have to assist my team.
Yeah, so I'm going to like a jack of all trades.
Yeah, I'm going to be a, what was that, help me help you situation.
Mm.
And none of us did bard. You could do bard. We actually talked about mixing in bard, but I was like, hey, let's stay away from bard because everyone kind of associates bard with the support, you know.
That's kind of like their thing.
That is kind of their thing. Talk to your bard. Consult your local bard when building one of these characters because they might get mad at you, depending on what you do.
If your aid action gets hard for more than 4 hours, just consult your local bard.
Yes. I'll go first, I guess. We can go back and forth. Yeah, sure. So at level one, I went halfling. I took the general background field medic. I wanted that battle medic early on. Mm-hmm. Halflings already come with that plus one to wisdom and con. Wisdom and dexterity. Sorry. I was thinking different. And I took my free ancestry ability at strength.
Mm-hmm.
My background, I took wisdom and dex, and then my class bonus, I took strength. So I got out of that negative zone with the strength for mm-hmm. being a halfling. Now, obviously, you can always choose to take your voluntary flaws to mix that up, but I didn't need them. As you can see, I didn't take charisma. I didn't take intelligence. Later on, I do start to stack up intelligence mm-hmm. for skills because fighters lack. They're not the worst. So I feel like sorcerers are the worst with skills.
They only get like
two. They get like two plus whatever their bloodline gives you.
Plus intelligence. And intelligence. They're not necessarily going to be pumping intelligence for most sorcerers.
Yeah. So my heritage, I took Hillock Halfling. Basically, what does Hillock say? Hillock is whenever someone, or it says whenever anyone uses treat wounds on you, you can eat a snack and gain more life. I just thought that was adorable, and I could not take it. I was like, that's funny. Be like patching up wounds and eating like a croissant or something. Like you stick a croissant. Cookie. I've actually done like in my personal life, like having a newborn, I've like been holding, feeding my baby and like stuffing food into my mouth. If you're not a parent, being a parent's partially like combat. Like you're in the trenches. You're just panicked. You're in a heightened state of awareness and
everyone needs a cookie.
And everyone needs a cookie. I'm pretty sure my wife has a few pictures of just me like shoving with like a cookie in my mouth, feeding my kid. I took my ancestry feet. So this one, I actually had two choices. Cooperative nature. Oh, sorry. That was human.
Yeah.
So intuitive cooperation. Sorry. And watchful halfling. So why didn't I take, what's the difference between the two of them? Intuitive says you are accustomed to working with others. You gain a +2 circumstance bonus to checks to aid. And your allies gain a +2 bonus to aid me. So it's kind of to help you help me. +2 is a lot, especially when you have to hit a DC 20.
Yeah, that's low. That's hard at low levels.
At level one, that's hard. You know, I'm hoping to be able to like supplement that.
Yeah.
So that's why I went with that. But Watchful Halfling was that say that I do come, that does play into it. Basically, Watchful Halfling is a whole text.
Yeah.
But
get to the meat.
You get a +2 bonus to perception checks when using sense motive or like perception. If you aren't actively using sense motive on an enchanted or possessed character, GM rolls a secret check, right? In addition to using it for skill checks, you can use the aid basic action to grant a bonus to another creature or saving throw or check to overcome possession or an enchantment.
Snap someone out of it.
So I can aid them by helping. I could give them that +2. To get them out of that possession.
Mm.
Obviously, the reason why I didn't go with that one off the bat was that's very circumstantial.
Yeah.
You have to look at what your campaign is going to be set out. If you're playing something Spooktober, you know, Halloween-esque, where you know there's going to be a lot of ghosts and spirits and creatures hitting you with occultism and they're dominating you, then that I would have went with that. But I said for a generic start, intuitive cooperation. And Steve, where did you go?
So I went with, obviously, a human rogue. I went with the warrior background partially because of this idea of I'm trying to also rope around as if I was playing this character, how would I explain a multiclassing into fighter? You know, background reasons of a warrior. And warrior also gives you kind of an interesting thing. It gives you warfare lore. And this character is a lot about skills. I'm going to have a lot of skills. You also get Intimidating Glare, and you get Intimidation as a trained skill. And the thing is, a cool thing about Intimidate is it, instead of just focusing on the aid action, you can use Intimidate to try to demoralize other people. And if you critically succeed on it, you apply that. You apply the flat-footed condition not only to yourself but to all your party members. So instead of just aiding and using the aid action, I can also aid with other things to lower increase chances of other people to do cool stuff. Increase their chance to critically hit, increase their chance to hit, decrease the chance of the enemy hitting us.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I went with that background. Kind of focusing on that, I also took a slew of skills. I'm not even going to go through all the skills I have. I have a lot. I have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 base plus the ones I get from my class and my background. So yeah, I have a few skills.
How many skills are? I think you almost have all.
I might have all. I took an additional lore at some point around just to get
to like stack up.
Yeah, just to just say, oh, I don't want any of these things. Is one of the lores I picked is whatever you need.
Whatever you need.
Whatever you need. I got it. I got it. one of the skill feats that I picked was Fascinating Performance, where it lets you use performance to, and one of the form performance is actually one of the skills I took, is it lets you fascinate a creature. Now, you can actually use this in combat. You do get some penalties. Can you use it in combat?
Yeah. You can try to fascinate a creature.
Yeah, you're trying to fascinate a creature.
You could use it in combat, but they can't be in combat.
Yeah, yeah. Does that make sense? You can't be actively stabbing them in the chest.
Yeah. And then be like, I'm fascinating you by stabbing you.
So it gives you a benefit if you go first. You can then use this on one of the other creatures. Yet again, if someone's fascinated, they take some penalties to their AC. I think that might be even the AC. Do you know what fascinate gives them?
No, I think fascinate just solely messes up your perception checks.
Oh,
and that's cool. Like your seek action.
So you can be, yeah, okay.
So remember, this is about you're helping the party.
Yes.
So you're the rogue and you come up and you're like, you know, you do some crazy thing to fascinate them. Maybe you come out, you show them like a juggling trick. You're like, mm-hmm. doo, 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 doo,
and then
doo,
let everyone sneak by.
And then everyone sneaks by while the guards are like looking at you. And you're like, look how awesome I am.
Don't look over there as I'm juggling.
Yes.
And the class feat that I took.
As a rogue, you can choose three like archetypes. What are they called?
Rackets.
What so
racket? I picked the scoundrel racket just because it kind of went leaned into the whole using my skills to help the party in not normal ways. Same thing is with that is you get trained yet again, trained in more skills. When you use the feint action, if you critically succeed, you get to apply that benefit to other people instead of just yourself. So we're going to keep adding into that fact that I'm going to use almost every skill to mess with those enemies to give my party any advantage that I can manage. Like I said, the class feat that I went with is your next is when you reduce an enemy to 0 hit points, you get to make a reaction intimidate check. You get a +2 to demoralize another person. Yet again, going into this idea of everything that my character is doing is to just mess with and demoralize and mess and F with the enemies to let my friendlies to be able to do basically whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to I also took cooperative nature. Yet again, I can add +4 to aid checks, which just is just a flat +4 to directly aid. Hey, I don't have anything to do right now. My party's kind of doing their thing. Just throwing a random aid in there. So spend an action. Say I'm helping this guy out. I'm throwing a rock right at this guy.
Oh,
you know, yeah. And okay. So then he's distracted. So then I'm going to get that +4 to aid that person. And they might be able to get that +1 or +2 to attack that person or do whatever they're going to do and to be nasty.
So Trev just hit us up. He said, Fascinate gives you a -2 penalty to perception and skill checks. And you can't use actions with the concentration trait unless they are targeting the subject of your fascination.
Oh, that's cool.
So that really helps because if you're dealing with casters, a lot of this stuff is concentrate. The wizard who's trying to be invisible, you can't concentrate on being invisible.
Yeah.
Because you're just enamored by the juggling skill of...
The mighty juggler.
Which I think is pretty awesome. So moving on to level 2, I took dubious knowledge. I did not find a better feat at level 2. I know I could have taken like die hard. I'm a fighter, right? Oh, sorry. At level 1, I did take point blank shot. Mm-hmm. I'm going ranged.
Yeah.
Point blank shot.
We're both going in a ranged direction.
Yeah. So dubious knowledge. The reason why I took dubious knowledge was, let's say, I think Fabio has done this to me a few times in our campaign, in our Rise of the Runelords campaign. He would try to like aid someone and he would roll on a skill and then like a knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then he would try to apply the knowledge he gained from the dubious knowledge to their skill, which is again outside of combat.
Yeah.
So you don't really, I'm not really worrying about action economy outside of combat.
Yeah.
But again, that comes back to you do learn a little bit of something. So can I help my friend over here? Because I just learned, you know, that flail snails are monsters and they have flail eyes that hit you, but their shell is also made out of like plaster Paris. Right? Now I'm able to say, oh, well, I'm going to use that lore I just got to aid that person on that aid check.
Yeah.
And this is the reason why I went level 2. Clearly, fighter, level 2. What class feat am I taking? Assisting shot. What does assisting shot do for you, Steve? Well, you can use the aid action with a ranged weapon. Instead of being within reach of the target, you must be within maximum range of the target. An assisting shot uses the ammunition and incurs penalties just like any other attack. So I can be at range with my bow and give aid to a player. And how am I doing? Well, I'm going to shoot an arrow kind of like whiz past his face. to like make him startle him.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and make give, you know, you plus one or two on your next attack. And it's a single action.
Yeah.
So I still have to take the aid action, but then I that eats up my reaction, right? Assisting shot doesn't eat up my reaction.
Mm-hmm. Well, that counts as your action during the turn.
During the turn.
To get the to apply the aid
yes.
later on.
Yep. And I still keep my reaction.
Yeah.
Which, as a fighter, I have shield block. So mm-hmm. maybe I'm using a buckler somehow. I could take my hand off my bow as an action and then raise my shield. So it's like three actions.
Oh, so you wouldn't have to take the aid reaction then later yeah. in the turn.
No.
Oh,
you that's instantly cool. use it.
I thought that makes it better than I thought it was.
Yeah. You can use the aid action with a ranged weapon. That one's a little confusing. Maybe you still have to use the reaction. Because it says you use the aid action.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you just regularly use it? Kind of comes up.
Yeah. I have to like take a look at that.
But that's what I talk. I feel that it probably does eat your reaction. They wouldn't have left that in there. They did a ranger ability that was going to...
let you infinitely do things.
That infinite let you do things. And I'm pretty sure they found that out. So, what did you get for level 2?
For level 2, I went... My class V is fighter dedication. So, this is where I'm multiclassing mm-hmm. into fighter to be able to get assisting shot. And I think one other thing, which gets me, surprise, surprise, more skills. And also took quick coercion. So I'm already trained in intimidate. So when I do the take of the coerce action, instead of being a minute, it's an action,
which is useful.
It's one round.
Yeah.
So instead of being 1 minute, which is 10 rounds, it cuts that time by 10. It divides it by 10. So I could take one round and try to coerce somebody.
Yeah. Be like, you know, you want to.
Yeah.
They're like, no, it's what you totally do.
Yeah. Or my buddy here is going to put the screws to you.
Yeah.
So it still can't be done in combat. So it's not like an in-combat thing. But again, sometimes no amount of diplomacy is going to get that information out of somebody. And since I'm getting other benefits, I'm really pumping into my intimidate, as well as a few other select skills. That allows me to get more use out of... I'm already focusing on it, so it lets me get more mileage out of it.
Mm-hmm. So, moving up to level 3.
And on the other benefit of being rogue over fighter, at least in the beginning, is I'm allowed to start with skills and expert versus starting and trained.
Oh, yes.
So I have a head start on a bunch of skills that by level 2 or level 3, or might have already two things that are expert,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even three things that are on their way to being expert.
That is also very important. We discussed, and I guess we'll discuss with you, we were talking... Is it better to have more skills, but lower level of trained, expert, mm-hmm. master, legendary, or have higher levels of trained, expert, legend, master? And it turned out that because if we're focusing on aid, the latter is the better choice because you'll always be getting those that plus 3 and plus 4 on your critical success. Mm-hmm. Having a higher chance to hit those numbers with the master legendary.
Yeah.
You know, that.
You have more chance of being successful, but less chance of using it.
Yeah. And
so it might be a wash. And yet again, if you're building this character as maybe like the fifth character in a four player party, you know, you're not mm-hmm. like a four player party is, but a lot of things are designed about four player parties. So that fifth player really gets carte blanche to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is a support character, and sometimes it is here's our one hole in the group, and we don't have this arcane caster, we don't have this support character,
yeah.
we don't have this, or we don't have that. We have the damage dealing, we have the healing, we're missing something. So this could be that one character that does have like a jack of all trades where they're not so amazing in this one thing. So like, I'm really good at attacking in melee, or I'm really good at casting high level spells, or I'm really good at knowing everything arcane. And I can, instead of being doing that, I can go, I am trained in almost every skill, or I have abilities in almost every skill that I can, for every situation, have an answer.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, you're kind of like the Gandalf character. Obviously, Pathfinder harkening back to, you know, Lord of the Rings, but, you know, any fantasy. There's always the the character that has the answer if you give them enough time. You know, there's that scene in Lord of the Rings where he's sitting in the cave. He's like, I don't remember this place. And he's like, well, we should just sit down and relax and, like, think about it. And he's like, oh, we should go left. And everyone's like, why left? And he's like, I feel a breeze. And that's kind of your character.
Yeah.
Also, this goes back to a lot of things we've talked about before where don't be defined by your class. This rogue by no means is the B&E rogue.
No.
This isn't even the rogue assassin. This isn't your edgelord, like, I'm going to sneak up behind them and, like, Batman them. No, this is your jack of all trades. You're the guy who goes in your face and is like, hey, how's it going? Like, do you want to get a beer? Let's go get a beer. I'm going to take this guard to go get a beer, guys. Does anyone want to come? No, you all have to go do something else. I'm going to take this guard to go get a beer.
Yeah.
You know, and then they break in.
Yeah.
Then the quote unquote B&E rogue, or in our case, Balin, breaks down the door can get in and get what they need.
Yeah. So you can take skills like athletics and acrobatics and take a bunch of knowledges and take maybe one or two face skills.
Yeah.
And then be that more of the going in and pick, you know, maybe take the, you know, take thievery, and you're maxing out athletics, acrobatics, and thievery and stealth.
Yeah.
And, you know, not worrying about all the other things. Or you can max out all your face style, like diplomacy, deception, intimidate. Or you can dabble a little bit of both. I mean, this is, I think what it is, I focus on intimidate, and that would be like my one face skill.
Yeah.
And then I took stealth, because what rogue isn't a rogue without stealth? I mean, you can play it, but stealth comes out a lot.
All the other rogues make fun of you.
Yeah.
They call your names behind your back.
They call your name. And I took performance, because the performance has, you know, number one, it's not a used skill a lot, and it has some bunch of interesting abilities that are quite powerful.
Yeah.
Like being able to fascinate somebody at low levels.
Yeah, at level one, strong. Level two. Especially if you're thinking about playing the current AP Extinction Curse, where you're coming out as a circus character. Mm-hmm. This is a really interesting character. I feel both characters bring a lot of dynamic.
And again, especially when you're fascinating somebody, you can help out that one character that is in full plate and is a walking tin can that is going to roll that -2 on your stealth check. You know, the person's fascinated. So to be able to listen to that person, they have to listen to you too. Yeah. So again, it's not only maxing your other characters in the parties, their benefits. Like, you're already good at hitting things, we're going to make you better. It's also shoring up weaknesses in your party that you may have. Maybe no one's really good. Maybe no one took stealth. Maybe no one took, you know, some of these other things. Maybe you're the only who can actually be successful when you're talking to an NPC and trying to get information out of them, or coerce them, or try to just pull or lie, and like something went wrong and now you have to you have to cover for the party. In the end, use a variety of situations where you can be shoring up the weaknesses as well as maximizing your benefits.
Yeah. This isn't, I think this character, these characters would be valued in any party. But you're not going to be the guy at the bar talking about how you got that nat 20 and rip the goblin's face off and stab the other goblin in the neck with the face of the goblin. You know, like, that's not your conversation. Your conversation is going to be...
Remember when I talked to that guy?
Yeah. Or remember when I fascinated that group and we all broke in? This character is the Robin. Or the...
Not even. That could be... There's going to be... I can see in both scenarios, your character, my character, that... This is like everything just went wrong. And the character's like, hey, I'm going to start juggling. Where, like I said, he just says the right thing at the right time to pull that person's attention, or comes up with an interesting way of using their skills and saves the party from a horrific failure.
Yes. So moving on to level 3, because we have to go 10 of these.
Yep.
So level 3, you have your skill increase. I took my general feat. I took Ancestral Paragon. That basically says you could get another ancestry feat.
Mm-hmm.
What did I take? Took Watchful Halfling. I feel at level 3, you might be dealing with some of those weird things. It was a hard decision because my other choice was going to be Halfling Luck. Halfling luck is
plus the saves, right?
No, halfling luck says once per day, you fail a skill check or saving throw, you can reroll the triggering check, but you have to keep it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now the reason why I was like this close to taking it was because again, this is a skill check for aid. So if I rolled that one, I'm not burning a hero point. I'm not burning. Oh no! I'm so sorry. I just gave everyone a minus one to their check. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna use my luck. Mm-hmm. Roll up. Oh, there's that 19.
Yeah.
You know, I think depending on where you go, how your campaign's playing out, if you don't see yourself ever come in contact with like some kind of mind altering creature, you know, if you're not dealing with occult stuff. Yeah. If you're not in what's the name of their spooky area in Pathfinder?
It's not Last Wall, is it?
No, the Last Wall's gone now.
It blew up.
It blew up. It has like some Romanian name or like the hints of Romanian names.
I don't remember.
We're terrible Pathfinders. We would get lost on the road. Be like, you know, we're looking for that town. You know what I'm talking about with the name with that has a V in it.
That has a V in it.
Yeah, you gotta go there. But so
left turn
in Albuquerque. So either one of those, I feel you can.
Yeah, you can get away with either one. You can get away with either one of those.
Yeah, I
one may be a little bit more situational, and one is only recruited once a day.
Once a day. So level four. I took Ranger Dedication. The reason why I went there is while Fighter has assisting shot, you only have to go two levels to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of. But
your focus isn't hitting things.
Your focus isn't really hitting things. So I went Ranger. Why Ranger? Hunt Prey. It's one action, makes it a target. You get a lot of bonuses with that. You get that as soon as you choose that dedication. Also, they get Monster Slayer or Monster Hunter. And that says. That's
eventually, right?
Eventually, you could take it as like one of your backup feats. And it says the moment you hunt prey, you can do a recall knowledge, which dubious knowledge kicks in on that check. So here I'm playing more of a I want to know what's going on, what I'm dealing with. And now I'm going to use that knowledge to aid my friends by saying, well, I'm going to take that aid action and say, hey, listen, they're scared of maracas. And you're like, oh, I got maracas. Blong, maracas. That's why I went that way. And the skill I took there,
We got a skill increase. We didn't talk about skill increase.
We did get a skill increase. Sadly, mine is I'm not taking a lot of skill increases. I'm kind of spreading myself out to get more skills. I took additional lore, and I just gave them more lore. There was also an option of taking godless healing, because that gives me more healing when I treat wounds.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably, if I was doing this in a real long-term campaign, I would take Godless
Healing. Yeah.
It's a little smarter.
It's really good.
That would be what I would take there. Instead of skill training, I just grabbed another skill. Again, as a fighter, you don't start with a lot. So I'm now, instead of what the rogue's doing, which is bumping their skills, you're kind of grabbing more skills.
Yeah.
Becoming trained in them. So where did you go, Steve?
So my skill feat is lasting coercion. So when I coerce somebody, it lasts longer, which is always good. I had to be expert to take it. Yet again, that's the benefit of the rogue is I'm expert very early.
Mm-hmm.
And then this point, this is when I take my first dedication feat. I already took the dedication feat. Now I'm taking the first archetype feat in that dedication, and I'm taking assisting shot. And that's where the assisting shot is. So I have to wait two levels to get it. But it's really good, and my skill increase, as you said, the fighter you're just taking trained in a bunch of feats just to get that wide berth of choices.
Mm-hmm.
With the built-in the fact that the rogue gets so many, I now can have that and also then start focusing on a couple of things that I'm really really good at. And I took in diplomacy at expert at this level just to add in that extra way of talking to somebody, because sometimes you don't want to threaten to cut the person's throat out or.
Yeah.
Or track down their family or,
mm-hmm.
you know, so sometimes you just want to go, hey, I'm your buddy. Here's a drink. How about you talk to me about something?
Yeah.
So that's where I
we are doing the help, the aid character, so you are trying to aid them in not getting murdered.
Hey, sometimes threatening someone is the right way to go.
I mean, threats always wind up with something. It's an option.
But this is why you party yourself with bigger people.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's why I took diplomacy. Gives you other options in those, not only in those combat scenarios, to be able to talk someone down or to be able to mess with someone in combat, and get those out of combat ways of shoring up shortcomings of your party.
Mm-hmm. So level 5, this is a big one. This is where you get your ability boost, your skill increase. I grabbed some more intelligence. I started bumping my intelligence. Mm-hmm. Again, trying to grab more skills as I go. What I take as my ancestry feat, cultural adaptability. What was that? Basically, it says you choose another culture.
And you can take ancestry feats.
You start to get the ancestry feats.
Yeah.
Flavor-wise, it's basically like these people adopted you, or like you adopt their culture. And I went halflings, and then I took human. Now, there's a reason for that. If you're not too up to date, halflings in the world of Golarion have been a servient serf race.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike D&D, where halflings are these like happy-go-lucky little fat people, in Pathfinder universe, they were a lot of them in Chaliax. They were slaves. In a lot of other cultures, they are kind of secondary citizens.
Yeah, Chaliax are D-bags.
Yeah, they are more of like a serf race or a servant race. So, human. My character served humans or worked with humans consistently. Mm-hmm. What I take from a human? Cooperative nature. I get that +4. Now, if you remember earlier, from my actual intuitive cooperation, I got a +2. I'm now sitting at a +6 mm-hmm. on my aid checks.
Nice.
That's at level 5. Again, because I'm only trained in a lot of skills, that +6 kind of really gives me the juice.
So at level 5, you need to, like, again, like Jared said, level 5 is a big level for all the classes. I started shoring up a little bit of, to get my stats to where I wanted them, because I needed a little bit of dex, I needed a little bit of strength just to qualify for the fighter dedication. But I also wanted to have 12 intelligence to get an extra skill, and I wanted to have that charisma. A lot of my skills are charisma focused, so I wanted to have that 18 in charisma. To do that, I had to take a voluntary flaw to, I think I took it to strength and wisdom. I wanted to bump my wisdom back up. So I actually started ignoring intelligence at this point, because there's already so many skills. And yes, I can keep taking lore skills, but one of my weaknesses at this point is having a negative to wisdom, which is will saves. So I wanted to shore that up. So I took wisdom, and like I said, I kind of started ignoring intelligence at this point. So it's going to stick to a 12. And yet again, I'm going for breath of positives instead of having one. I mean, even though I have the 18 charisma and mm-hmm. I can keep bumping it up, it's no reason not to. I can then start, like, yes, technically on my intelligence skills, I'm only getting a +1. But now on my wisdom skills and my perception, now it's at a 0. And eventually might go to a +1 later on. So yet again, I'm not only shoring up the party's shortcomings and focusing on their expertise, I'm also doing the same thing for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I took natural ambition because there really wasn't another good feat that I could take. And I went and took another level 1 feat because I kind of ignored it. I went trap finder. Finding traps is always good. And if I have the option, so I get pluses on that. So I don't get, you know, fell in that spike pit trap full of acid and snakes. Hatred and horribleness and snakes. And then my skill feat, I took battle medicine just because it's very good.
Welcome to the party.
Yeah. at this point, I bump my performance as my skill to expert. And again, starting increasing, being able to fascinate people, being able to distract people, you can say I distract people with a rock. I can distract people. Say bad things about his mother. I can mm-hmm. distract people by being really nice and trying to like throw like little mental logic puzzles with diplomacy. Yet again, I can just be dancing and just mess with them. They're like, well, why is this person dancing? It's a comet. There's a great X coming at their head. And then it goes, oh my God, there's the arrow on my face.
There you go.
So, yeah. So, yet again, just spreading out those pluses, being able to get these really interesting skill feats to trigger much mm-hmm. more often, and also more skills more chance to say, okay, well, in this situation, well, I can't do this, this, and this, but I could do that. And that'll say that I can aid with, you know, this skill doing this thing.
Yep. So moving on to level six, this is where now I'm starting to get my ranger stuff. Mm-hmm. I took basic hunter's trick. I took monster hunter. That was the one I was speaking about earlier, where the focus of your hunt target, now you start to get pluses, mm-hmm. and you can start to give those pluses to your teammates.
That's cool.
Which is fun. My skill feed at that, I took ward medic. Again, I've had that battle medic for a very long time. So I've been using that in combat consistently. If you're kind of new to Pathfinder and you're listening to us, medicine is going to be a skill that gets overlooked and should not be overlooked. Medicine is a definite skill you should at least have one or two players in your party have and be adequate with. Mm-hmm. Battle medicine says in combat, I can use my treat wounds action. And
once a day for that person.
For ward medic, basically it says ward medic, what does that say? I have to be an expert in medicine. I'm an expert in medicine. Mm-hmm. You studied in large meds, wards and hospitals and such. When you use the treat disease or treat wounds, you can treat two targets. If you're a master, you can treat up to four. And if you're legendary, you can treat up to eight. Why is that important? When you treat, you need 10 minutes per person normally for the medicine check. 10 minutes for you, 10 minutes for you, 10 minutes for you, 10 minutes for you. Now, the reason why I say you should always have at least two people, because you're in a four-man party. Now it's 20 minutes to heal the party. Yeah. It's no longer
an hour and a half.
Yeah. Well, I'm assuming.
Only one person has it, it's like an hour and a half to heal four people.
And that slows down. Now you're looking at a DM who either is hand waving or you're getting hit with random encounters.
Just defeating the purpose of healing.
Yeah. Or you're getting hit with time. Might be on a time crunch. Like you got time to sit down to heal because you got to get this parcel to so-and-so.
Yeah.
Ward medic now makes it go faster. Battle medicine makes it go faster. These are how you shore up. I know in a lot of people, they say, well, clerics don't heal as much, or you don't get as many spell slots because of XYZ, and I needed that heal. If you're coming from Pathfinder 1, clerics had this like burst AoE heal naturally. Mm-hmm. Now you have a heal spell that for one action, it's a touch. For two, it's like 30 feet. And for three, it's like a burst, right?
Yeah.
So... But you're burning a spell slot. Medicine, you're not burning anything. Well, you need healer's tools and time.
Yeah.
So that's why I went ward medic. So what did you do, Steve?
What did you take as your class feat?
Monster hunter.
That's right.
Monster hunter.
So I took as my class feat is battle assessment. Now, battle assessment has got a long list of things.
So good.
But it's really cool. Basically... You can take careful observation during combat, mm-hmm. and the GM rolls a secret perception check. Another reason why I wanted my wisdom not to be negative, of a particular enemy of your choice who is not concealed. And then yet again, the GM can apply penalties for distance or our extenuating circumstances. On a success, the GM chooses one piece of knowledge from the enemy from the list above that they give you. And the list is which enemy weakness is the highest, which enemy saving throw is the lowest, which one immunity the enemy has, or which of the enemy's resistances is the highest. In a tie, the GM can choose at random. If I get a critical failure, they give you some false information. So this is, yet again, why you don't want a low perception. On a critical success, you get two pieces of information. So you get to get... pretty detailed information about that guy's reflex save is trash, or oh my god, we can't. This guy's will save, he's indomitable,
yeah,
or man, he's immune to fire, don't use fire. And it's like the sorcerer's like, oh no, I have all fire spells,
yeah. You're Trevor, and you decided to just
well, he's got cold and fire, so it's not Trevor.
Well, it's not Trevor,
yeah. Super useful skill, it's not limited to per day, it's just you don't know the result, so it's entirely possible that. You go, it's immune to cold, and it just keeps healing from cold damage. It's like, oh no. So mm-hmm. it's really useful, really interesting. And it's not just a standard, oh, I rolled a skill check. I mean, in old Pathfinder, funny enough, the battle assessment in Pathfinder 1 was built into every skill check.
Yeah.
And it was, okay, well, how much I beat the DC, got how many pieces of information is, mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. how my DM ran it. And this is kind of built into the rogue feat, and it kind of makes sense to the point that the rogue can see the weaknesses and
the chinks in the armor.
And chinks in the armor, and, oh, man, because he's walking in this way or holding himself in a certain way, I know that that's to say that's his best save.
Yeah.
So like, you need to avoid that or whatever.
They have a limp or something. And
yeah. Or, man, his skin's really, really thick, and so a fire's probably not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really interesting skill, action you can take. Yet again, sometimes you just you have an action to burn. Well, I could do that, or I could aid, mm-hmm. or I could do something else. And the skill feat I chose, surprise, surprise, ward medic for everything he said before.
Yes. So moving on to level 7. Level 7, you have your skill increase. What did I do on my skill increase? My skill increase, I took society because, again, I'm picking more skills. My skills aren't as awesome as everyone else's. I'm shoring up. Obviously, I could have had a character with higher intelligence. Maybe mm-hmm. I don't go a marshal, like I'm a fighter, but I'm more of a battle aware fighter. So yeah. I could have had a higher intelligence, had more skills to start with. I didn't go that route. Mm-hmm. It's always an option. 7.
Level 7, yeah.
Yeah. My general feat, I took untrained improvisation.
Improvisation.
Improvisation. Blah, blah, blah. Words are hard. Probably stop drinking.
Drink more. It'll get better.
It'll make it better. So, you learned how to handle situations when you're out of your depth. Your proficiency bonus for untrained skill checks is equal to half your level instead of 0. If you're 7th or higher, the bonus increases to your full level. So, taking that level 7...
makes sense.
It makes sense. You just kind of jump at that point.
So everything you're not trained in, you get your level to your proficiency. You don't get to add any of the other trained, expert, whatever. It's just your straight level.
Level, yep. I get battlefield surveyor. Whether taking stock of an enemy army or simply standing guard, you excel in observing your foes. Your proficiency rank for perception increases to master. So now I'm a master with the high wisdom. That makes me really, really good. I have with my perception is right now at level 7, say, plus 17. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty high. Perception. Plus 17. And in addition, you gain a plus 2 bonus to perception checks for initiative, making me faster to react in combat.
That's cool.
Which gives me the ability to start to aid, start to assess what's going on faster. And weapon specialization, and that's up to you. That stuff, you could start to fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
Where'd you go, Steve?
So, I went with the two feet. You get a general feat and a skill feat.
Mm-hmm.
The general feat I picked was Terrified Retreat. So, I had to be master and intimidate at this point, and I'm already able to pick up masters, because that's where we're going to jump ahead. And that's where I put my skill increase, is into intimidation to become master. So, I could take the Terrified Retreat. When I critically succeed on a demoralize action, if the target is lower level than I am, then the target starts fleeing for one round. So you get in. So they're going to possibly going to be dropping something they're holding. They're going to be – they're not hitting the party anymore. They're not doing whatever the mean things that they're doing to the party. So, you get in. Just adding into the – I can help in a multitude of different ways. The other thing I picked is battle cry. When I roll initiative, I can yell a mighty battle cry and demoralize as a free action during initiative. So immediately I can start the battle demoralizing somebody.
Which is good.
So yet again, if I can critically succeed with that, everyone's getting that benefit. They're flat-footed to everybody. So yeah, it's just stacking upon stacking upon stacking.
Yep. Level 8. You get a class feat. I took an advanced hunter's trick. What I take was ranger. And I took scout warning. Again, bouncing into that. Help you, help me, helping everyone. You are about to roll perception for survival check or survival check for initiative. I'm going to roll perception because I got that plus 17. At this time, it's plus 18, plus 2 for initiative. So I'm at a plus 20, and it says I'm about to do this for initiative. Mm-hmm. So you know, that plus 20... I'm critting initiative. I'm going first yesterday. You visually or audibly warn your allies, giving everyone a +1 to initiative rolls. Depending on whether you use gestures or call out, this action gains either the visual or auditory trait.
Yeah.
This is probably going to be me yelling. Just, ah! Or something. Or throwing snacks at people. Just, peanuts! Wake up, peanuts! And then my skill feat, continual recovery, bouncing into that battle medic, using that medicine skills, those medicine skill checks, consistently in combat, being the aid, helping my party.
Yeah.
What does that do for you? Continual recovery, expert in medicine, you zealously monitor a patient's progress to administer treatment faster. When you treat wounds, your patient becomes immune for only 10 minutes instead of the 1 hour. Mm-hmm. So normally when you treat wounds, you have to wait that 1 hour. So I'm like, all right, I helped you out, Steve. But guess what? I thought that kobold fight was rough. But now we just fought like three armies of zombies. So I have to wait 1 hour to heal you. This, it's only 10 minutes. Now I'm like, you know, we're faster. We're just moving. We're more precise about what we do. We're a well-oiled machine. So what did you do for level 8?
Funny enough, I took the same thing.
Oh, told you. You can't go wrong with medicine.
No, I was taking the other feat.
Oh, you took the other one?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my ranger. Scout's warning.
Scout's warning. I took, well, ranger and rogue can take it.
Oh, they can?
Yeah. So it's a level 4 feat. Nothing at the higher levels really was calling to my... yet again, a lot of the things that were higher levels, like, oh, you can do more backstab damage if you're building a melee weapon. You could do more of this thing. If you're flanking, and generally I shouldn't be in danger.
Yeah.
And generally, the other people, the fact that I'm not a focused combat character, the other characters will hopefully, at this point, be able to help me out so I can help them out.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things. Everything has its place. But a lot of the other abilities weren't really up my alley. Like I said, melee weapon versus range, and we're using a ranged weapon. I could have went with a multi-class feat and took double strike, but yet again,
you're burning two actions.
Yeah. Or I'm burning one action to attack twice. My attack's not, I'm not focusing on the attack.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on other things. So I'm like, Scout's Warning was a really interesting ability. Yet again, it helps me help them.
Yes.
And also took Intimidating Prowess, which is as my skill feat. Get in. I have been leveling up my strength to a point. So in situations where you can be physically menaced, you get a +1 circumstance bonus to intimidate checks. Yet again, also going into the thing where if I do down somebody, yet again, that could be physically intimidating somebody.
Yep.
So
talk to your DM.
Yeah. Yet again, if your strength is 20 or higher, that's not going to be for this character, but you get an additional +1, but it's still just a +1 to intimidate anytime you're using your physical size.
That's the difference between a success and critical success.
Yeah.
That's always stated. Oh, if I had that extra one.
That one plus one, yeah.
Like, oh, you're off by 1. You know, no one's ever like, oh, you're off by 6.
Yeah.
Like, okay. There's nothing I can do about that. So, and mind you, all everything we're talking about, none of these characters have any magical or
advanced
gear. This is just solely statistical character sheet.
Yeah.
We're not messing with gear. Gear changes everything. You can start to get crazy, you know, whatever you need, you start to fulfill yourself. So level 9, good skill increase. I took Ancestry Feat at level 9 for a halfling. The best ancestral feat for this specific type of character is Helpful Halfling. Clearly, you have to take it. Has helpful in the name. You aid a friend with a task. You find many ways to help your friend. On a critical success to aid, you grant your ally a +3 bonus, which isn't bad. Instead of the +2, you now are getting +3. If you have expert in the skill rather than a +2, and you grant your ally a +4 bonus if you have master proficiency rather than 3. So everything kind of bumps up
by 1.
If you roll a critical failure check to aid, you don't give them a -1.
Oh, that's cool.
So I automatically just stop being terrible at aiding. So, you know, at this point, people know what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
No one's going to be mad at you that you accidentally critically failed. You rolled that 1.
Yeah.
And you're saving
And it's only a -1. It's not completely failing their action.
Yeah. But at this point now, at level 9,
it
doesn't even matter. Oh, I failed the aid. Nah. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
You know, let's keep moving forward. Combat flexibility and juggernaut are your class jumps. Your class things.
Abilities.
Abilities.
Yeah. At this point, I took master and medicine. just get in, just helping the party out.
Mm-hmm.
My answer to defeat is, funny enough, is very similar to yours. Mm-hmm. It's called Cooperative Soul. It's a human feat, a human answer to defeat. And it says, you have developed a soul deep bond with your comrades and maintain an even greater degree of cooperation with them. If you are at least expert in the skill you are trying to use in your aid action, you treat every roll that's not a critical success as a success. So you even roll that one, it's a success.
Wow, that's really powerful.
Yeah. So you ignore failures, you ignore crit failures, successes, and all crit failures, regular failures, and successes are all successes. And then if you happen to roll a critical success, you just get extra on top.
Yep. That's really good. So you're always giving that plus.
Exactly.
One.
Well, you know, I'm mitigating the minus in a different way of you as you, but yet again, I also gain the benefit of, I'm not giving more of a plus.
Yeah.
But what I am is I'm also making sure that failures give a plus.
Yeah.
Instead of your failure will still give nothing. Mm-hmm. Your critical failure won't give anything. And then, but if you do succeed, you're giving more pluses. Mine's are more of a consistent, I'm always giving the plus, but it's only plus one or plus two or plus three, depending on the skill, rank of the
skill. Yeah, mine jump skill. In the intensity of their plus and critical success. Yours is a guaranteed plus one on your HF. Yeah.
And I'm going to be focusing on things I'm expert in.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, I mean, I might, in that way, I might kind of redesign it. And instead of taking master in some things, I might consider just taking expert in a lot more things.
Yeah.
That's another way to go about it. But yet again, having that one thing that your character focuses on, especially with having so many skills, is a nice way of diversifying character, making your character special. So like, you're not always helping somebody out. Sometimes you are your own character and you don't always have to be helping. Even though that's where we're going with this, you don't always have to be helping someone out. Sometimes you can take front and center stage and say, I'm the best at this one thing or this two things.
Yeah.
And I took God of the Ceiling. At this point, we talked about God of the Ceiling before. I took God of the Ceiling at this level. Welcome just to make heal. Just to make healing that much better. Just to make medicine that much mm-hmm. better.
So moving on to level 10, this is kind of where we stopped. We feel at this point you have a grasp of where we're going. Mm-hmm. And kind of an idea where you can start to take your character. Obviously, you didn't hear a lot of us talking about skill, like class skills. Like, you had the assisting shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yours, Rogue, came with a lot of stuff, but Fighter didn't come with a lot of, like,
yeah, I ignored a lot of what the things that they got.
Yeah. So
they got a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So you can start to, you could take this concept and just put it on top of a sorcerer or a wizard
mm-hmm.
or a
Druid.
It doesn't have to be
a champion and do this.
Be a champion and do this and be a better champion. You could be like, I know they got rid of him, but I remember in First Pathfinder, you could be a hospice paladin.
Oh,
they were specifically focused on healing.
Yes.
A hospice champion. That's kind of what this is. You're more about aiding mm-hmm. and giving aid and support. You know, it gives a lot of concepts for roles of, I'm a champion, but I'm not the smite champion. Mm-hmm. And I'm not I'm going to break everyone's bonds. I'm a champion who my God says, go out and just give everyone a gold star and help everyone help them help themselves. You know, you can, in theory, even play like a champion of Torag and
mm-hmm.
because he's like crafting and, you know, you could say dwarves are kind of like the God helps those who help themselves kind of race. So Torag kind of, embodies that concept. Yeah. And that's what this is. This is a help you, mm-hmm. you know? So at level 10, what did I do? You got your ability boost. I went with more intelligence, picking up more skills.
Yeah.
So this is, I had to talk about like doing with any class. This is, I now have a class feat that I thought was pretty cool, and a debilitating shot. Basically, what the debilitating shot says is, so this is at level 10. Fight, it's a flourish. It's two actions. Aiming for a weak point, you impede your foe with a precise shot. Make a ranged weapon strike. If it hits and deals damage, the target is slowed one until the end of turn. That slowed is good. Mm-hmm. Slowed doesn't hurt. I felt it was really good. And for my skill feat, I took, my character doesn't have, and I have godless healing,
mm-hmm.
clearly doesn't believe in a god. I took mortal healing. Mortal healing, this is core rule book. You can find it. Basically, prereq says godless healing. You follow laws of morality or like a concept. you grant greater healing when the gods don't interfere. So this is kind of like the you could totally play this with a druid. You could play this with a druid. When you roll a success to treat wounds for a creature that hasn't regained hit points from a divine magic in the past 24 hours, you get a critical success on your check instead, and restore the corresponding amount of hit points.
That's cool.
So, I like its flavor.
Yeah.
Godless healing. This kind of taps into that, shoring up the, you know, like, you don't need gods. You just got to do better for yourself. You can play this as a very, like, not the atheist, but like, we don't need gods, guys. Like, just trust me. We can do this ourselves. Additionally, with that, there's robust recovery. If you don't want to go that route, robust recovery, when you treat wounds with disease and poison,
you get better treating
disease. Yeah, you get a bonus granted a +4. And if the result of the patient's throw is a success, it instantly becomes a critical success. Mm. So that's your two choices. I went with the other one because I kind of felt this guy would tell you to believe in the snack more than the god. And it kind of lays credence to the help me help you.
Mm-hmm.
And where'd you go, Steve, at level 10?
So when I went and started putting points into my, and again, I'm focused on dex because we're playing ranged character, charisma because a lot of my skills are charisma based. Now I started increasing my wisdom again. And again, perception goes up. Some of my skills are wisdom based.
You had that ability that said the DM gets to roll with the monsters, or the enemies.
That's all my perception. Having plus to that is good. Also, I get ability that I'm not sure a lot of people get. As in earlier levels, I get master in perception.
Yes.
So that's always going to, you know, increasing that just to have that trigger more often. And I went in constitution. Yet again, at this point, I don't really need to be stacking strength as much. I got some points in strength, and that's useful. But, you know, again, shoring up, like, hey, more hit points never hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The class feat, actually, I have to talk about something I got at level 9. Level 9 rogue comes with something called debilitating strike.
Ah.
It's different than the ranger one.
Mm-hmm.
So a debilitating strike is I strike my foe off hits a flat-footed creature. So I have to hit someone who's flat-footed. And I can choose that obviously it does damage. I can choose a debuff to put on them. One of them is they move 10 feet slower. So it's not in a slow effect, but they move 10 feet slower. Or they become enfeebled 1. Those are pretty good debuffs to choose from. What tactical debilitations does, it adds 2 more things that I can add on to that as choices. And you can only pick one, but every time you hit somebody, you can choose something different.
So you start stacking.
They only last 1 round.
That's
not bad.
You're not really stacking.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that it's hard to stack them. You have to keep hitting the same person who's flat-footed to you.
Well, again, we're helping our team.
Exactly.
So if I hit them with something, I'm sure someone else has something.
Exactly. So the 2 other things that you can add on to as a choice is the target can't use reactions. They then, for 1 turn, can't use reactions. Or the target can't flank or assist someone else to flank. So flanking is a big thing that the enemy's doing. You're fighting the Thieves Guild or the Assassin's Guild, and they're just setting up flanks left and right.
Mm-hmm.
You can hit someone in the back of the head as long as they're flat-footed to you. Maybe you're flanking them, or you use one of your many skills to make them flat-footed to you, and you hit them with one of these. Now they can't grant that flanking to them, and they can't benefit from flanking.
Those are two
really big things. Yet again, adding to these things where I'm just widening the choices and the options I have every turn to say, well, you can't do this, or my team can do this now.
Yeah, you're taking away their skills.
And the other thing I picked was foil senses, which is you have to be master in stealth. When using avoid notice, sneaking or hiding actions, you will always be considered to being taking special precautions for special senses. So if a character has some sort of scent ability or imprecise sense, you're always assumed to be taking the precaution of evading that. So, yet again, it goes into action economy. I think that when you're taking the time to avoid those senses, you move slower. With this, I don't think you move slower.
No.
So, yet again, just kind of widening a little bit of stealth, a little bit of charisma, a little bit of thievery, a little bit of everything. Taking just kind of cherry picking a bunch of abilities just to.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can see how similar these two builds are, but you can also see how they're diverging in pretty significant ways.
Yeah, I mean, again, the whole concept of this conversation was to talk about aid, why you should start using aid. Mm-hmm. And like we said, if you always have that third action and you're like, what do? Aid, just aid, please, aid. I know a lot of magic users have stuff where it's like two actions and then they're sitting there and they're like, I guess I throw my sling. If you listen to our old podcast, you will hear people say that. Mm-hmm. I'll shoot my sling. You know, but now what I'm saying is you have these skills. There's a lot of skills, you know, use them. And aid is one of the major skills out there that you can use on your third action that you're not 100% sure what to do. And like you said, if you're the fifth member in a campaign where most of the time campaigns are built around four to five. But most of the time, if you're like, I want to do something different. And a lot of times, right, the conversation is, well, role play a character different. Role play the fighter different. Or role play the rogue different. Well, this actually makes you different. This is a different...
And these are your statistical benefit. It's not just you acting different. It's you playing differently.
Yeah, you're looking at a single ability, and you're saying, I want to use that ability to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. And if I say ability one more time... With that being said, I feel... Again, you can take what we said and just run with it. Yeah. Run with it. Use aid. I know Pathfinder 2 has a lot of new mechanics that were not there. And if you're coming from 3.5 Pathfinder 1st edition, you know, 5th edition, and other editions, you'll start to see, like, this has so many actions you can take. And it becomes quite overwhelming. Sometimes if you just focus in on doing one thing and one thing very well, you'll see that that character is a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And I mean, who doesn't want to, you know, you could play the cowardly character, quote unquote cowardly, who's not in the mix. None of our characters are powerful statistically in damage.
What was the name of the rogue that was in Conan the Destroyer at the end of at the end of the movie? Conan defeats the big monster with the giant magical horn, and the other guy like walks up to the dead monster, stabs it once in the back of the head, and then puts his foot on him as if he conquered the whole thing. That's, you can play that kind of character, because that character was useful. There were times that he needed to open that door. There's times that he needed to kind of be a distraction in that fight, and he really wasn't trying to participate. He was trying to survive.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, like, yeah. But the Conan was like, I love fighting. And the woman with the staff.
Oh, yeah.
She was like,
I love fighting.
She was like, I love fighting. And then you have the wizard guy. He was like, I have magic. And the rogue was like, I'm going to die. Bam. You know, but I felt he aided. He did give
He did. There were times, I mean, obviously, there were times where he would play the cowardly character and he didn't add anything. And then there were times that he was the clutch character. He was the guy who stepped in and said, well, I'm going to do this one thing, because if I don't do it, I die as well as everyone else.
Yeah.
So he had a direct personal motivation for doing it. But still, he decided he didn't just flee and run away. He was there. He was in the mix.
Yeah. And aid, you know, you're never, because a lot of times players will get mad, and it's just a game, right? We always say it's just a game, but you're invested. You spend
four, five,
6 hours a day playing this, and you're like, hey, man, I wish you would do something in combat besides hoping to flank, or besides this. Like, just please do something else. This is that character. This is that. I'll start to aid my team. You know, I'll start to fascinate enemies and enfeeble this guy and distracting shot that guy and aid that guy over there while the barbarian starts to mop up people.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you don't have to build an entire character around it. And you can take aspects of this with any character.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can take, like I said, some of those halfling feats. You can take multi-class and maybe take one of these feats. If you are a ranged character, you might want to just take the aid shot.
Yeah,
level, the assisting shot. The assisting shot. Whatever level you want. And then, but you don't really take anything else. But say you're the fighter with legendary attack, right? And you're gonna aid.
Yeah.
You know, and say, it also could, on the other side of that coin, is say that the way you've built your character, the encounter is specifically geared and not designed because your GM's a jerk, but sometimes encounters are designed to combat one specific thing. Okay, well, there's this fire mage. Okay, well, everything's immune to fire or resistant to fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really can't do, you know, do much as a caster who's focused on fire spells. You can, maybe there's certain things that are immune to piercing damage that's really going to mess with any ranged character. So you start realizing that, man, all my attacks are doing virtually no damage. Instead of doing that, you start shooting arrows like a maniac at all these different monsters, and you're aiding different people, or you're throwing dirt, or using these other things. So, in essence, you're built as a combat character, but you still have better capacity than the rest of the group to aid.
Yeah.
So you can take small aspects of it. You don't have to go full bore. No. If you don't want to, you can. And yet again, and then we even talk about magic.
No, not
I'm not even talking about magic items. I'm talking about like magic. You can still, yet again, if you want to play a buffing style character, mm-hmm. you can play attacks to a magic user, yeah. and it gets ridiculous.
Yeah,
you start buffing and enlarging this person and giving strength to that person yeah. and.
Yeah, you become very versatile very quickly
yeah.
and a threat
yeah.
very quickly. Like, again, like you said, enlarging. Okay, I enlarge. That's two actions. And now I'm going to take the aid action.
Yeah.
And I have all the stats to give me that plus six on that D20 roll. Okay, it's a flat DC20 on whatever aid you want to do. All right, I got plus six, man. Like, it's happening.
It, yeah, plus six on it and plus whatever you're using to aid.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's... You know, even at these levels, even if you're using one of your, you know, lesser statted out skills,
plus nine.
It's a plus 10 or a plus 9.
Yeah.
So then plus another six on top of that.
Yeah.
You're getting that on like a 5, not even.
No.
Like a 3.
3, yeah.
You know, and then if you roll like something like, oh, you roll that 18, you're critting and you're giving even more pluses.
Yeah. Yep. If you really liked Power Up, and if you really enjoyed what we're doing here, please shoot us a line, drop us a line on any of our socials at NVNG Podcast on our, that's Twitter, right? Twitter at NVNG Podcast at...
Tina's not here to do
Tina's
this.
Tina's not here. Tina, where are you? We need you, Tina. She is furiously typing in chat.
She's like, rrr.
Sam and Maximilian. Twitch Williams, the two NYPs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sam Burke and Maximilian.
Maximilian Twitch Williams. Yeah, are the two NYPD. Yep, that's it. Tina's furiously typing. She's aiding me. Quick, aid me, Tina. Thank you for being in chat, Tina. But like I was saying, drop us a line at any of our socials at NVNG Podcast.
Facebook, Nothing Venture, Nothing Games.
Nothing Venture, Nothing
Games. If you want to email us, it's nvngpodcast@gmail.com.
On our Instagram at nvngpodcast on Instagram. And Nothing Venture, Nothing Game on Facebook.
NVNG on Patreon if you want to throw us
a
dollar.
I did want to say something on the Patreon thing. To all our Patreon subscribers, thank you very much in these very, to be serious for a moment, on these very... crazy times that we're living in right now with the outbreak of the virus. We appreciate everything you've done for us. You will be receiving special stuff in the mail from us to show our gratitude. And we're also going to be putting out a lot more stuff within the next 2 months. If we're not able to stream, we will be moving to probably doing a Discord or some kind of we will get there. We're going to be putting up ramblings for you guys. I'm going to be opening up all the tiers this time to get all of our stuff, because we know if you're dropping us a dollar, that dollar could be going to something to help you out, but you're instead helping us out. And for that, we love you and we want you to be safe. If you don't got the money, cancel it, please. By all means, cancel. I know it's weird hearing like one of these Twitch people, the streamer podcast people to scream like, cancel it. No, man, like if you are having hard times right now, please, by all means, do what's best for you and your family. Don't worry about it. Come back in a month or two when we're all safe and secure and you can have some fun with us. And you can hit us up and, you know, we're all having a hard time out there. So don't worry about it. To the people donating, I guarantee you're going to be getting your stuff. You're going to be getting a buttload of pins because I just got the pin press. So we're instead of just doing the one option, we're going to do all three options. You're going to be getting special pins that we run on our stream of our character logos, the Balin logo, the Keiko logo on the stream with the little symbols.
Those are Paizo images.
Oh,
those are free use Paizo.
They're free use. They are free use. Free use
Paizo images.
So we will free use them.
To freeze them into the ground.
Into the ground. But with that, please be safe. I am breaking many laws by being here with Steve. But
no, there's no laws.
There's no laws. Not where we were coming from. Because we love you guys and we love that you support us. And with that, we will start to close up.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, with this whole thing going on, there may be some times we miss a stream just because, you know, it's hard to get seven people together when you're not supposed to congregate in groups of people.
We were technically supposed to be 6 feet apart, and we are about like a foot and a half, 2 feet.
Yeah, well, there's a portable hole between us. This is where the 6 feet's coming from. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this time is this crazy time. This is not something that, you know, this isn't just a crazy snowstorm that happens every year. This is some crazy shit that's happening.
Yeah, all 50 states have been hit.
Yeah, talk about the 50 states, I mean, the world.
Yeah, the world. I mean, the world's been hit. I got family overseas and in the military. God bless you guys. And please stay safe.
Yep.
You know, don't just, you know.
Do what you got to do.
Do what you got to do. And with that, we love you. Be safe. And coming to you from Port Joe Smith in the Arachnid Quarantine Zone, I'm your host, Jared, and this is Steve.
Yo.
And we are Nothing Ventured, Nothing Aimed podcast. Good night.
Later.